We've allowed customers 5 minutes for people who are delayed in traffic and so on. It's a pleasure to welcome you. My name is Nigel Cameron. I'm from Chicago, and I chair the advisory board for BioCentre. Delighted to be here with you this afternoon. This is the first of a series of four seminars. The second one is outlined in the program material, which we are running this year, on what we call technology, democracy, and human rights. We have some very distinguished panelists speaking to us this afternoon. We hope that we'll stay right to the end, because after the end, well, we have some tea halfway through, but we have some wine at the end, which tends to keep the audience in place. I'm delighted now to introduce the director of BioCentre, Rachel Bell, who will be moderating the program. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'd like to echo Nigel's welcome to everyone here, and specifically to this symposium on robots and rights. Will artificial intelligence change the meaning of human rights? I did a quick flick through on the Google News search, and it seems that most of the recent coverage of robots and rights relates to the government commissioned report, which has been treated with a degree of hilarity and mockery in the mainstream media. I was a specialist person who was more serious about it, and I hope today that we can combine the good humour with the serious analysis. I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Nick Bostrom, Director of the Future of Humanity Institute at Oxford University, He previously taught at Yale University in the Department of Philosophy and in Yale Institute of Social and Policy Studies. Which has many publications to his name. His writings have, I understand, been translated into 16 languages. He has a background in physics, computational neuroscience, and mathematical logic, as well as analytic philosophy. Dr. Bostrom is a leading thinker on consequences, ethical dimensions, and risks of anticipated future technologies, and on big picture questions for humanity. His research also covers the foundations of probability theory, scientific methodology, human enhancement, and moral philosophy. I trust that you will all be receiving or have just received handouts in connection with this presentation. Welcome to the Bostrom to speak on the ethics of artificial minds.
Thank you very much. Welcome everybody. So I think that it's really not so much the body as what's inside it that raises more interesting ethical questions. So although it's a matter of terminology, I will refer to artificial intelligence and artificial minds rather than robotics, which is the shell. I think it's important to distinguish between different classes of possible artificial minds, because they raise very different kinds of ethical issues. On the one hand, we have kind of domain-specific AI algorithms that already exist today and are in wide use, such as an industrial robot. I'll talk briefly about that. Then we have a very different kind of machine that can have moral status, and we can have artificial minds with unusual and strange properties, we'll talk about, and finally we could have machines with superintelligence. We'll get to briefly at the end. So this is a very broad overview kind of talk. It's a work in progress, some of which I'm doing together with a colleague of mine, Eliezer Yudkowsky. So I will talk about the ethics of artificial minds as opposed to public policy or law or regulation, because I think it's a more primary question. We need to have some understanding of the basic moral issues that arise before we turn to the more practical challenge of crafting laws and beginning to push in different directions. So, with regard to domain-specific AI algorithms, I think there is no fundamental new moral questions. They are basically tools, and as with any other tools, there are ethical issues that arise in terms of how we use them, and who has responsibility when things go wrong, and what's the correct way of shaping these tools. But and you're not harming the pool. If it's wrong to do that, it's because it's not yours to do it with, or because you're polluting the environment, or because you're hurting some human being or animal, but not because you're actually hurting the robot itself. Nevertheless, there are a variety of moral considerations that should guide development and use of domain-specific AI algorithms. And as these kind of AI applications become more and more prevalent in society, these kind of ethical questions in design become more and more important. Now, these kind of algorithms are already very widespread. What tends to happen is that it's called AI before it really works, when it's still a research project, and then once it becomes routine use in industry, it takes on a different name, something more specific, data mining analysis, for example, or neural networks, sonar recognition, credit card fraud checking software, and so on. But there are a number of things that are often overlooked in the design that arises when you have tools that actually process information and are supposed to be operating in a social environment. You can imagine a scenario where, say, a financial institution, a bank, has introduced a new way of checking applicants for a mortgage on their creditworthiness. Perhaps a lawsuit has been brought against the bank because it is alleged that they are discriminating racially between different candidates, they're turning down a disproportionate number of black applicants. Maybe this was the reason why the bank introduced the system in the first place, because this algorithm that they're using, they're not actually feeding the race of the applicant into it, and so the bank can argue that there can be no racial discrimination because the algorithm doesn't know the race. Whereas if it's a human making the judgment, you can never really be sure if they are sort of subconsciously biased in some way. So the bank then has this defense that the AI is not told about the race. Nevertheless, you look at the statistics and it seems that the number of approved applications from black people is declining, and there seems to be racial discrimination. Now, depending on how this algorithm is constructed, it might or might not be possible to figure out what is actually going on. If it's a neural network, it might be infeasible to see exactly how it is that the algorithm comes up with this result. You know, maybe it has detected that people who come from who grew up in poor neighborhoods, you know, have a higher default rate on their credits or whatever. Maybe that correlates with something. Maybe it's an accident of the letters of the alphabet and the names or whatever. You might never be able to detect it. A better design system would be auditable and transparent in the sense that you would be able to go in and figure out exactly what it is that the algorithm is basing its decisions on. And this, you know, it might not be so profound an issue as some of the later ones we'll talk about with robots that are right, but if you imagine a situation where you are actually turned down by one bank after another, you think you have a good credit rating, but just no bank will accept you, and they can't tell you what it is. It might be a pretty frustrating experience. So, creating systems with a tendency not to make innocent victims scream with hopeless frustration. We want ethical desideratum in the construction of these systems. Other questions that arise here is the degree to which it is possible to manipulate or corrupt the system. AI designers often, if there are practices to develop systems for use in industrial construction, they might not be able to think of the kind of new design desiderata that arise in a social environment where there might be people who are possibly trying to fool the system. So you have an airport scanner with image recognition software that is supposed to detect guns. It's one thing to be able to distinguish a set of random shapes from a pistol, and another to be able to distinguish a pistol from someone who deliberately tries to mask the pistol with some device, maybe an anti-pistol shape that kind of has the opposite shape of the pistol to make it look like a block or something. So now these new kind of issues that arise when you are trying to use AI in a social environment, and I think they're not really fundamental issues in moral philosophy, but they are important issues and they are practically relevant right now. Now, we get to an entirely new kind of set of dilemmas when we consider machines that would have moral status. So something has moral status if and only if it is the case that because X counts morally in its own right, it is permissible or impermissible to do things to it for its own sake. So there might be things that it's impermissible to do to something that doesn't have moral status. It's impermissible for me to go and smash that connector because it doesn't belong to me. But it's not because the connector counts morally in its own right, so it has no moral status. But we think humans have moral status, and most people think that animals as well have at least some moral status. You can't torture cats just for fun. And there might be degrees of levels of moral status. The general view is that current computers and robots have no moral status. They are inanimate objects. But you could imagine a more advanced future type of technology where a lot of people will begin to argue that the machines could have moral status. Let's distinguish two properties that one might think could underpin moral status in machines or in other creatures. First, sentience. It's the capacity for phenomenal experience, or qualia, as philosophers call this, such as the capacity to feel pain, to suffer, to feel happiness, or have any sort of subjective conscious awareness. We think not only humans have that, but also many animals. And if an AI system reached, say, the level of cognitive ability and versatility of a mouse, say, or a cat, then it would be an important question whether it might not also have this phenomenal experience. And if so, it would have a kind of moral status. Just as you can't torture the cat, you couldn't torture an AI and not have the same phenomenal experience as a cat. And sapience, which would be a higher level of cognitive ability, roughly equivalent to person, a kind of higher cognitive capacities that makes it possible for you to respond to reason, to be moral agents, to make long-term plans, and to have a self-conception of yourself over time. And this, perhaps, is what results in the full set of human rights and full moral status that we ascribe to the normal human person. So with these definitions in mind, what kind of moral principles can one propose to deal with these hypothetical machines that would have either sentience or sapience? Now, one kind of way to begin to think about this is by finding analogies to other principles that we're already applying and try to extend them to this new case. So we can think of cases in the past where we have been moved by arguments to assign moral status to various entities. For example, we have overcome racism, various kind of aristocratic morality where people were assigned a different moral status based on the blood lineage that came from. Most moderns think that these are irrelevant factors in terms of moral status. So one could try to formulate some moral principles to generalize these types of considerations to apply to machines. But here's one. And I'm not going to argue in detail for this, I'm just going to propose this to give you a flavor of the kind of principles that might be useful. The principle of substrate non-discrimination, which would say that if two beings have the same functionality and the same conscious experiences, and differ only in the substrate of their implementation, then they have the same moral status. So the idea here is basically, it doesn't matter whether you are silicon or carbon. What matters is what you can do, what you do, and what you experience, what you feel. It's not the atoms that make up you, that gives you a moral status, but it's the functionality and the sentience. If one accepts this principle, then a whole lot of results that we have already derived or accepted in the human case or in the animal case can be directly transplanted into this new domain of artificial intellect. So if we think that it's wrong to torture a cat just for fun, then the same would hold for any system that is equivalent to a cat in terms of its functionality and sentience, and differs only in terms of the substrate it is built of. So you can get a whole lot of results that you already accepted in one domain to apply to this new domain if you accept this. Here's another principle that one could consider. The principle of ontogeny non-discrimination. This would be the idea that if two beings have the same functionality and the same consciousness, and differ only in how they came into existence, then they should have the same moral status. So for example, if two entities are now qualitatively identical, but looking back in time, there was a different causal process that brought them into existence, then they should still be assigned the same moral status. It doesn't matter whether they were created through normal, natural human procreation and raised in a family environment, or if we're created in a laboratory by some scientists that put it together. Assuming that now you are exactly the same in either case. Obviously, if the outcome is very different, then there might be different moral status. But the mere fact that there were some causal factors in this past created, you shouldn't have any relevance to the assignment of moral status according to this principle. Now, if one wanted to argue for this principle, then I'm just tentatively putting them forward here, then one could draw an analogy in the first case with, say, arguments against racism and try to extend those against substrate independence, and in this case, other arguments that we have for thinking that your lineage shouldn't make a difference to argue for this, and probably non-discrimination principle. And so this would apply both to it would apply to all artificial intellects, whether they were on the level of a spider or a mouse or a cat or a human being. If they were comparable in all other respects, then we could sort of remove these factors from consideration. Now let me just briefly say something about minds with strange properties. So here's one way in which new ethical issues can arise in the context of AI. Perhaps subjects can come apart from personhood or sentience in artificial minds. Maybe not, it's a difficult philosophical question to say. We think that every human being who is every adult human being who's normal and healthy and has normal cognitive capability, who is a person, also is sentient. Every such normal human being has conscious experience. But perhaps it would be possible to create some artificial intelligence that would have the same behavioral repertoire as a normal human being, yet without having any subjective normal experience. Or it might not be possible. This is a difficult and controversial philosophical question. But if it were possible, then these two criteria could come apart. So you might, in that case, have a person who had no sentience, no inner life. And the question of how ethically to treat such an entity would then arise. Would that entity have the same moral status as another person, or is what really matters what goes on inside? If it couldn't really feel pain, would it still matter how we treated it? So I'm not going to say anything further about that, just flag that. Then there are things like ease of copying. And artificial intelligence is basically a piece of software that is being implemented. Then reproduction is very different from human beings, where it takes a long time and you can only make a limited number of offspring. I mean, you only have slight influence over how the offspring turns out. But with an AI, you could make indefinite number of copies very quickly, and they would be exactly identical to parent. And that might draw sorts of norms regarding freedom of reproduction and so on that would have to be rethought in this context. It might be okay for humans to be able to decide how many children they have, but if you could make trillions of copies, then you might sort of need to put restrictions in place. There are many other unusual properties of artificial intelligences that might also either raise novel moral questions or force us to rethink some of the mid-level moral principles that we take for granted in the human context. Subjective and objective time illustrates one of the sort of completely new ethical questions that arise. So, objective time is what your clock would measure. Subjective time is harder to explain, but think of an AI that is running on a given computer, and imagine that the AI is equivalent to a person, thinks the same thoughts as a person does. Now imagine that you move this same program into a computer that is twice as fast as the original one. So now, over the same period of objective time, it will sort of have twice as much subjective experience, take twice as many thoughts and emotions. Because it's exactly the same program that is running, it's just running twice as fast. The program runs sort of twice as long in the same period of objective time. Now, in contexts where the duration of something matters, you then face the question of whether to count duration in objective or subjective time. So, for instance, if you're imposing a prison sentence, 10 years, should that be 10 years of objective time, or should it be 10 years of subjective time? If you have an AI that is running really, really fast, then an objective time of 10 years might be the equivalent of eons of subjective time. And maybe it should just be in jail for a few minutes if that could be. So depending on which way you go there, you might have a different outcome. Or if the question is, there are different entities that are each in need of pain relief, which should we give priority to? Should we give more priority to one who is running on a faster time because they can sort of experience more pain in a given interval of time? My view is that it's subjective time that we should go on, but I don't have time to argue for that today. But that illustrates some of the kind of moral principles that one might be considered. And finally, I'm going to say a few words of the ethical situation relating to the prospect of the creation of greater than human artificial intelligence. So, in a sense, we first talked about non-sentient AI, where they are basically tools, and the ethical issues that arise in the first case was all to do with how the use of that tool will affect other people. Now, then we talked about machines with moral status, and their ethical questions also arose about our duties towards machines, because they themselves became moral subjects. And here, with regard to superintelligence, we face, in very stark form, the idea that it's not just how we treat them, but also how they should treat us, because superintelligence would be a very powerful agent in its own term. So there is the ethics of how an AI of this sort should treat us. But that also results in the prior question of, since we will be the creators, if there will be superintelligence created directly or indirectly through human action, about how we ought to go about to design such a system, if we should do it at all. Let's call the kind of superintelligence, assuming we will have some superintelligence or another at some point, that we ought to build friendly superintelligence, one that doesn't harm us or kill us or do things that are wrong. So the problem of creating friendly superintelligence can then be broken into problem of creating superintelligence and problem of making sure that it's friendly. But these two challenges shouldn't really be addressed in that order, because superintelligence is not just like any other invention that we made, but it would be a very powerful thing. So if you think of a superintelligence as something that is approximately as intellectually superior to we are as we would be to other primates, then it immediately becomes clear that once this thing is in existence, it might no longer be under our control to change it if we don't like the way it behaves. It might resist our attempts to revise it, just as we would resist the attempts of any monkey track to sort of change us. I don't like what we have evolved into. And then I want to go back and redo it. Well, it would be difficult to pull that up, and it might be no less difficult for us to change superintelligence once it is in existence. Intelligence, perhaps, is the most powerful force in the universe because it creates all the other tools, weapons, and strategies that we use to manipulate the world. So really, the challenge must be confronted in this order. First, we must figure out how to create friendliness, and only then should we even contemplate creating superintelligence. So this is, in a sense, the first ethical point I would like to make about superintelligence, that there is a moral obligation among AI researchers pushing in this direction, not just to research how to make better and better AIs, but to the extent that the research is actually focused on eventually reaching or exceeding human level intelligence, they should also put effort, perhaps even more effort, into figuring out this first problem of friendliness. Now, for most people, this is kind of a remote issue today, but if and when the prospect of superintelligence becomes a more near-term realistic prospect, then I think this issue would raise in importance, and it might be the most important of all issues that humanity will ever face, because the superintelligence might determine the future of life in the universe and survival of humanity. It will be the last invention humans will ever make. So, even though it might seem improbable and a long way off, because of the immense significance of it, I still think it's worth spending some time on it already today. Now, friendliness can be thought of as consisting of two distinct problems. We have first the technical problem of figuring out how to design a goal architecture that is stable on the recursive self enhancement of intelligence, and that forces the AI to act in the ways we intended. So the basic idea here is that with superintelligence, you're not going to control it or decide what it does by trying to manipulate it after it comes into existence, because it's too powerful for you to do that. Figure out a way out of the box, even if you put it in a box. So what you need to do is to make sure that it doesn't want to do the things we would have wanted to do in the first place. But that's a difficult technical problem. A lot of things that I don't really have time to get into it, but it's harder than one might think to do. And a lot of the ideas that immediately come to mind that people will come up with a little bit of failure before reveals that they would lead to disaster immediately. And things that work in a sort of human context don't necessarily work in this context. So, to give one simple example, or two simple examples, suppose you want, as one of the things you want your superintelligence to do is you want to, you know, figure out this answer to some difficult mathematical problems. That's one little useful thing that it could do. Now, if the superintelligence is given this as its top level goal to figure out this answer, then it might proceed to change the whole Earth and subsequently the rest of the solar system and the galaxies into more and more computing software that could calculate a more and more precise answer to the question that you had asked. Now, obviously, that was not what you intended when you asked this question, but if that was really what the top level goal was, then that might be what this optimization process would produce. Or suppose you want the AI to make people happy, and you define happiness in terms of a pattern that is manifested through smiling faces. So human beings smile when they're happy. So let's build a sort of very powerful neural network that will get a reward signal whenever it perceives an intuitional feel, a smiley face, and then let's go about figuring out how to maximize the number of smiling faces. And here again, you might get some perverse consequence, like it might sort of tile the Earth with molecular-sized images of smiley faces that maximizes that utility function. So you can give it a utility function that sounds good at first sight, but it immediately revealed that it's not what we want. And we're also imagining here that probably you won't get to superintelligence in one fell swoop, but rather you might create some sort of seed AI, some self-enhancing AI system that sort of bootstraps itself, and that creates additional problems of having a motivational system that is sort of stable through this iterative process of self-modification. But this basically is a programming challenge, a very difficult problem, but it's a technical problem. There is also the philosophical problem of figuring out in which ways we ought to intend the AI to act. So this is basically, the first is figuring out how we can get it to do what we want it to do. And the second problem is figuring out what it is that we want it to do. And this, too, is a lot trickier than one might have first proposed. I mean, it's the classic genie in the bottle problem, where, you know, I have all these, there are many different variations of this, and of course in different cultures, but the basic idea is that you have some genie that, you know, grants you three wishes, and you can wish for anything you want, and it sounds like a great thing, but then it turns out the protagonist wishes for something, and it sort of has unexpected consequences or, you know, implications that they hadn't thought of, and it all turns out disastrously. And this would, in effect, be the same situation. We would have a genie, a super intelligence in this case, rather than a supernatural entity, but something that would greatly grant whatever you wish for, if you had solved a technical problem. And then it would become very critical to ask wisely. One of the complications here is that whatever we think right now would be sort of a good way for the world to be, or a good condition for, you know, humans to live and exist, we must recognize that throughout history, people have changed their minds about what is necessary for the good life, or what the true values are that are worth pursuing. And it would sort of be naive for us to think that we have now figured out all the values, and that if we sort of specify the wish now for how the world should be, that precluded any possibility of learning more and expanding our appreciation of what is of value, then that could count as an existential disaster. So somehow you would have to solve the philosophical problem in a way that is sufficiently open-ended, or open to, that the solution itself would have to include within it a sort of sensible search for possibilities that we're not currently aware of. And that would be very difficult to formulate. So on all these different levels, inanimate tools, AI, machines with moral status, ranging from, you know, spider up to human level, and then with superintelligence, there are interesting philosophical problems. Beginning, they're more practical relevant right now. In the middle, they're more philosophical relevant, machines with moral status. And at the end here, they are philosophical relevant, and they might become, at some point in the future, extremely practical relevant as well, although they are not yet so. So unfortunately, this is all we have to at our disposal in trying to solve these problems. To do the best we can with it. Thank you.
Last year on the comparative international approach to bioethics, for those who are interested.